from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, in the wake of escalating populist anger, President Barack Obama said yesterday that he intends to block the millions of dollars of bonuses slated for executives of AIG, the American International Group, bailed out by U.S. taxpayer dollars. We'll sort out the legal and ethical issues involved in the hour coming up, and we'll see if we can find out what the president can actually do about raises that AIG CEO and a number of legal experts have said are contractually binding and must be paid despite public indignation. Forum is next with your calls and emails right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. Insurance giant AIG, the American International Group, has been under government care and taxpayer ownership since September, but managers and government officials either ignored or simply signed off on over $450 million in bonuses. It was reported yesterday that $170 million was to be paid to the company's financial products unit, responsible for last year's $40.5 billion in losses. And yesterday, President Barack Obama ordered Secretary of Treasury Timothy Geithner to, quote, pursue every single legal avenue to block these bonuses and make the American taxpayers whole, end of quote. This forum hour, we want to focus on the AIG raises and what can or can't be done about them. Joining us from Palo Alto is Joseph Grunfest, who is former commissioner with the Securities and Exchange Commission and co-director of the Rock Center on Corporate Governance and professor of law and business at Stanford University. He joins us from the Stanford campus. And welcome, Joe Grunfest.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you here. Also want to welcome Jesse Eisinger, who is with us from New York. He's Wall Street editor with Portfolio Magazine. And welcome, Jesse Eisinger.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let me begin with you, sort of to get the journalistic picture of things. These bonuses, reached the flashpoint, I guess, as you said, after the news broke over the weekend. But we're talking really about just regular folk out there in terms of populist rage, people who've seen their 401ks descend and think we're bailing them out with our taxes. And why are they getting bonuses? Have you ever seen anything like this?
Not in my career on Wall Street, but this has been building for quite a while. I'm not surprised by it. In fact, I've been more surprised that the bailouts of the banks so far haven't stoked outrage. They've been very poorly designed, and I think that people didn't really understand how poorly designed. And now that we're getting the sense of it because of things like these bonuses, that the government is pouring money into banks to save them from bankruptcy, from dissolution, and what they're doing is they're using that money in some cases to pay bonuses, to pay dividends, to pay interest on their debts, to buy back stock or buy other companies, things that have nothing to do with getting the financial system going again.
The president, as I said, has said that essentially this will not stand. But when you look at the fact that Larry Summers, for example, said the administration has reviewed all its legal options and concluded that this administration really doesn't have power to stop these payments, what really can be done at this point?
Well, they're scrambling to contain the political fallout here, and so that there's a lot of rhetoric about Larry Summers went on television this weekend and said it was outrageous what was happening at AIG, and then you're citing the president's speech yesterday ordering Geithner to review this, but the bonuses have been paid out. Even though officials knew that the bonuses were going to be paid out, this should have been addressed much earlier, and other governmental officials, congressmen, were urging them to do so. And the problem here is that the government controls the stock of AIG, but doesn't want to actually control the company and make the decisions and make hard decisions about reining in the bonus culture on Wall Street. And so we have a very sort of schizophrenic, divided approach to the entire financial bailout, and it's going to have to be remedied because it's really stoking this kind of populist rage.
Well, an AIG official was quoted in today's New York Times as saying that they would have never gone ahead with these bonuses without the knowledge of the Fed and the Treasury, and yet you have officials saying they didn't know, including Timothy Geithner. What's kind of puzzling about this whole thing is Timothy Geithner with Ben Bernanke and former Secretary Paulson was involved in sort of planning this whole bailout, wasn't he?
Geithner knew. Geithner did know about the first rounds of bailouts. So now he's sort of attempting to leak to the press that he didn't know about this latest round of they're calling them retention payments because bonus has acquired this unseemly connotation. But it's the same thing. And he's arguing that he didn't know about the latest round. But I find that implausible. But, these guys are the most modest defense I could possibly muster is that they're overwhelmed and incredibly busy, and Geithner does not really have much of a staff. He's a technocrat, really, and a creature of who's in need of a staff, and he doesn't have one. And so potentially maybe this is the latest round is something that that he overlooked or didn't understand was happening. But he is the architect of this, along with his predecessor under the Bush administration, Hank Paulson. And so he knew in general that these guys have the right to pay bonuses, even though that is coming directly from taxpayer money, because money is fungible. If the taxpayers put in money, when they pay it out, if they're paying out in bonuses, that's taxpayer money.
Jesse Eisinger, again with us from New York, is Wall Street editor of Portfolio Magazine, and Joe Grunfest is co-director of the Rock Center on Corporate Governance and professor of law and business at Stanford, also former commissioner of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. And Joe Grunfest, who's overseeing all this? I mean, money isn't going to recapitalize banks or enable them to essentially lend again, and one has to ask, where's the monitoring of all this?
Well, titularly, the Federal Reserve and the Treasury are in charge of this entire process, but there's been extraordinarily broad criticism of the quality of the job that the agencies have been doing and of the lack of transparency. And I think it's really important that the administration address these questions, because unless the public has confidence in the quality of oversight that's going to be occurring here, the public isn't going to be excited about opening up its purse even wider than it already has to continue to bail out the financial services sector.
Well, there's a lot of political action now because the public is so outraged. In fact, they're talking in the Congress about putting bills into tax up to 100% of these generous bonuses or retention, whatever you want to call them at this point. Do you see a way out of this that can match the rhetoric we're hearing from President Obama?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you talk about Obama's rhetoric, because I watched his press conference yesterday, and it reminded me of this great movie that came out in 1976 called Network, in which the lead character, stands up and winds up screaming many, many times, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore." It seemed to be Barack Obama's Howard Beale moment. And he ordered the administration to try to figure out how to go out and make these bonuses go away. And many of the contractual approaches that people were talking about, I think, are doomed to failure. On the other hand, some of the tax proposals that are now beginning to float around, the idea generally being to impose an excise tax on the recipients of these funds from AIG, these ideas appear to have more legs. And if you were to impose an excise tax of, say, 50 or 60%, it would essentially take away all of the benefits to the recipients of these payments at AIG.
Can the Obama administration renegotiate the packages? I mean, this is now 80% owned by us, the taxpayers. So one would think that maybe we're talking about abrogation of a contract here, but we're also talking about who's in charge and who owns this operation, aren't we?
Well, as a practical matter, we own, 80-85% of the equity interest, but that doesn't mean that we manage the company. There's a difference between being a shareholder and actually running the company. If we wanted to exercise our authority as shareholders, arguably we could step in and run the company. But still, we have to remember that these contractual provisions were entered into in the first quarter of 2008, and the government made its first TARP investment in September. So the deal pursuant to which these funds are being paid to the employees was cut many, many months before the government appeared on the scene.
But the government could, for example, as Barney Frank has pointed out, fire these people for incompetence. They may have a right to bonuses, he said, but not necessarily their jobs. Or couldn't bankruptcy be declared and they could be fired?
Well, firing these people is not necessarily the easiest or the smartest thing in the world to do. AIG is pretty much in a state that's called rundown. They're not writing new business. What they have is a big batch of extraordinarily complicated, very toxic derivative positions and insurance on derivative positions, and they need extraordinarily skilled people who've got a lot of deep knowledge about their book in order to continue to manage the situation. This is, you know, a little bit like a situation where you've got a bomb, and the person best qualified to defuse the bomb may be the people who helped actually build the bomb.
These crooked pathfinders have to work it out, in other words, as
someone
put it.
Well, you know, here's the irony. Number one, we don't really know exactly who these people are. It's entirely possible that many of these people are extraordinarily competent technocrats. And you had a previous management who said, look, we're running in this direction. We want you guys to build the technology that takes us there. Now exactly the same people who are merely technocrats but extraordinarily well-paid technocrats are being tasked to say, well, all right, we want you to deconstruct what you constructed.
Well, Jesse Eisinger, there's some fear in this that if these technocrats or whomever they may be are let go, that they can go elsewhere and mess things up even more. At least that's what I've read. Huh?
I don't know how they could mess things up anymore. I don't agree with Joe entirely. There's been a lot of talk about a concern that the government would be abrogating contracts. But as you pointed out, renegotiating a contract is perfectly acceptable, a normal course of doing business. Putting aside the hypocrisy or in the argument, not from Joe, but from other quarters, that you know we can put we need to put GM into bankruptcy and break the contracts with the UAW, but the contracts with these high-paid derivatives traders at AIG are sacrosanct. Put that aside for a moment. The fact is that these guys are not geniuses. They did blow up the contribute to the blowing up of the global financial system, and their knowledge is not unique on Wall Street. And if they want to go and find other jobs in this climate, I say have at it. The point is here that this is not a unique skill that they have. These derivatives, some of them are bespoke, in other words, highly complicated, unique contracts, but some of them are plain vanilla contracts, credit default swaps on residential mortgage-backed securities that, while it's delicate to unwind them and that takes time and it's difficult, there are lots of other people who can do this. It's going to be a money-losing situation inherently. In fact, Warren Buffett went through this very type of unwinding when he bought a reinsurance company called Gen Re and got out of the derivatives business, calling derivatives financial weapons of mass destruction. He lost about $400 million in very placid markets. So these guys are going to lose a lot of money. But my view is that the bomb has already gone off. It's not that they're defusing anything. The bomb has gone off, and we need people to get them out of there. But I don't think it's necessarily the same people.
Want to address that, Joe Grunfuss?
Well, you know, the short answer is we don't know. Jesse could be entirely right. I mean, in order to form any view as to whether that's the correct answer, we do need to know a lot more about the book. We need to know who these people are. We need to know the degree of complexity and difficulty associated with these situations. It's entirely possible that with more information, I could wind up agreeing with Jesse. But the problem is we as members of the public are being asked to form opinions with insufficient information.
Well, we've got New York State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo seeking and talking about subpoenaing the release of names and all that sort of information that you're talking about. But it seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, Joe Grunfuss, that if the company knew it was in such terrible financial shape and decided on these bonuses anyway, isn't there some fraud questions here?
Well, you know, if you have a look at the submission that was put in by AIG to Treasury, they said they went to the lawyers, and the lawyers told them that their hands are tied, that they've got contractual obligations to make these payments. They have to make these payments by March 15th. that if they didn't make the payments on those dates, they would be subject to additional penalties under Connecticut law, which governs in this case, and that the least bad of all of the alternatives, in their view, was simply to pay the money. Now, from management's perspective, I understand why they reached that conclusion, but by the same token, I think it's entirely understandable why Congress is outraged and why Congress is likely to move ahead, I think, with a tax-oriented approach designed to undo a large part of these payments.
Well, that's already in the works. We should mention that Harry Reid, the majority leader of the Senate, said recipients of these bonuses will not be able to keep all of their money, and Chuck Schumer from New York said, if you don't return it on your own, we'll do it for you. I mean, this appears not to be just rhetoric. But I'm struck by something else in this, Jesse Eisinger. And, you know, when you said earlier that Timothy Geithner, well, it's implausible that he didn't know, even though he said that he didn't know until recently, is last week. The Jon Stewart video that went around where CNBC folks like Jim Cramer were excoriated for believing what officials and particularly people like CEOs have been telling them. How much of this does really plays into this whole equation that we're talking about here? That is the lack of folks out there to do the kind of journalism that needs to be done.
Well, I think that that's been a big problem. I think that the lack of journalistic expertise contributed mightily to the problem. I don't think we did our oversight function adequately enough. When I was at the Wall Street Journal, I was at the Wall Street Journal for about 8 years, and I about 6 years, and in that time, I felt like we concentrated too much on a couple things. One was personality. Another was the stock market and equities, and much of the credit bubble was forming in complex derivatives in the fixed income market. So we had the wrong model to approach this journalistically. I feel like we did a pretty good job on the housing bubble and mortgage bubble. I wrote a lot about that at the Journal, and then when I came to Portfolio, I wrote about over-leveraged investment banks. So there were bits and pieces, and other people did good work, but there's the business press is a creature of the investment community. We often fail by writing for investors instead of writing to hold businesses and leaders accountable for their actions. And my view is that the business press needs to reevaluate and become much more adversarial in nature. It doesn't mean knee-jerk fashion, but we have to be much more questioning and hold people responsible.
That's a little bit like our friend Jim Fallows, much of his criticism of, let's say, writers who need these sources for information and therefore they may play up to them more than they need to or than they should. Adversarial is perhaps a much better way to go about it. It's like those sports writers who are afraid of alienating athletes because they're the sources of information. In fact, Joe Grunfest, I like your line about some of these contracts making the contract with Barry Zito look good by comparison.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, that's a comparison. And by the way, you know, I would say that the British do a much better job in this area than we do. I mean, if you read the coverage in the Financial Times and The Economist, that's typically the place that I go to for the best insightful information. Somehow or other, they've you know, managed not to fall prey to the phenomenon of needing to coddle up to your sources.
Well, look at how they talk to their politicians. Look at how the legislators in the parliament talk to their politicians. I mean, there's no sycophantic behavior there, really, compared to us.
Precisely. And you know, from my point of view, to the extent that we can get our business press to be a little bit more British in terms of their approach to the situation, I think we'd have a better country.
Well, yes and no, if I may interject. I mean, the British banks are more poorly capitalized. They have less capital than the American banks.
A lot of them are getting these bonuses from what I
understand.
And they're getting
bonuses,
including AIG.
My point is about the press. I think the British press, in many ways, is intellectually better capitalized than the American press on many of these issues.
My point was that the British press didn't see these systemic problems, didn't warn about them adequately either. They didn't warn about their banking system or their housing bubble either. And arguably, the UK is in a more delicate position than the U.S. Because their economy was much more leveraged to the financial system, the financial economy. So I'm not in, I understand, you know, there's a rhetorical adversarial nature of to the British press, which is very good, and they're very cogent and well argued. They have sort of this Oxbridge argumentation that's very good, but what they don't have is enough investigative skill and in-depth reporting. And the U.S. brings that to political reporting, but the U.S. business reporters don't have enough of that. And we need to sort of, I think that your point's well taken, but I don't think it's entirely accurate.
I'm getting a flood of emails already, and we'll open up our phones when we come to the half-hour mark. But here's Eugene, who sends the email, and this is to you, Jesse Eisinger. Why doesn't Mr. Geithner have a staff yet? What's the holdup?
Well, the holdup's been that he – one of the things is that that's not appreciated about the Bush administration is that many civil servants below the appointee levels left because they were demoralized at the SEC, at Treasury, even across agencies, the FDA, the FTC. And so – it's all, going into this, it's not entirely Geithner's fault. It was a very poorly staffed organization because people had left and they were all demoralized. But also, he's gotten a slow start getting his appointees, getting his deputies in place. He tried to get a well-known banking lawyer, Raj Cohen, from Sullivan Cromwell appointed, but he backed out. He's just had some bad luck. Annette Nazareth, a former commissioner, I'm sure Joe knows, was mooted as a potential candidate to be a deputy. She pulled out. So it's just been a little bit of disorganization and bad luck. There's a lot on his plate, but the real problem, the fundamental problem, is that he was an architect of a very poorly thought out bailout plan from the beginning that really, you know, Paulson and Geithner together formed this plan when Paulson was Treasury Secretary, and now they're really dealing with the aftermath, and it's much harder to clean up a mess than it is to, this mess that's been created than to have solved it properly in the first place.
And so the government was saying that Tim Geithner was the only man for the job in the Treasury despite his tax problems, ironically. Like, I suppose these fellows and women who are executives getting bonuses are the only ones who can do these derivative trades, so they have to be kept in their position. Here's David from Emerald Hills, Joe Grunfest, who says, yes, we're all annoyed by the AIG bonuses, but that was not worth argument when there was very real reason to believe that if AIG failed, there would be rapid worldwide collapse of our financial house of cards. The dollar amount was only 0.1% of the total. What we should be discussing is how to carefully take apart our financial house of cards so they're are no individual firms too large to fail?
Well, the emailer is precisely correct. It's intriguing. The emotional energy that's attached to these bonuses is certainly understandable, but it's really distracting our attention from the much bigger and much more important problem. We built a financial system that's really, in a certain sense, beyond our ability to control and regulate, because once institutions get to be so large, once institutions get to be so interconnected, there's a level at which the moral hazard is unavoidable, where if they get into a problem big enough and bad enough, no matter what the regulations are, we have no choice but to open our checkbooks and bail them out, because otherwise the consequences are even worse for the United States economy and for the global system. So what I hope people look at as we move forward in this area is to think not only about a different regulatory structure, but a different market structure, in which the need to bail companies out in the future is going to be significantly diminished.
We're coming up on a break, and we want to invite those of you listening to join this program. You can do that now, toll-free, by calling our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, available to you. Whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius XM satellite, feel free to join the program. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, and the email address here is simply forum@kqed.org. We continue with Joseph Grunfest, who is presently co-director of the Rock Center on Corporate Governance and professor of law and business at Stanford University and former commissioner of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And we're also talking to Jesse Eisinger, who's with us from New York, Wall Street editor for Portfolio Magazine. When we return, more of your calls and emails. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In the face of growing public anger at Wall Street, President Obama said just yesterday that he would try to block the millions of dollars in bonuses paid to AIG executives. We were talking about that and talking really about the whole debacle involving AIG and Wall Street. Joseph Grundfest with us from Stanford is presently co-director of the Rock Center on Corporate Governance and professor of law and business at Stanford, and also former commissioner of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. And Jesse Eisinger is with us from New York, Wall Street editor of Portfolio Magazine. We're going to go to your calls and more of your emails. Actually, some emails here making suggestions about what can be done. One listener writes, why doesn't someone suggest or demand that AIG executives in line for these bonuses show some moral leadership and just choose to not take the money? The government may not be able to stop the payments, and AIG may be contractually obligated to pay, but the executives in the derivatives trading department are under no obligation to accept the money. I've been in line for bonuses at work before and have been asked to forego taking them for the good of the company. Under these circumstances, it would be patriotic and admirable for these executives to do this. They could show some moral backbone just by turning taxpayer money down. Another listener writes, if AIG had declared bankruptcy, could a judge void the contracts and other obligations? It seems other companies have been able to do this. Witness United Airlines, able to void responsibility for workers' pensions. I'm sure there are other examples. And Tom says, as a bankruptcy lawyer with 30 years of experience, I have a simple answer to the bonus problem. Let the Treasury act like an insurance company and litigate the bonus retention payments, call them what you will, under New York State fraudulent transfer law. Lots of suggestions. Joe Grundfest, some thoughts from you?
Yeah, no, I think the anger is palpable. I think the anger is real. Senator Grassley, very interestingly, yesterday observed that the recipients of these payments should either volunteer to give them back or take the Japanese approach and commit suicide. it's a remarkable statement coming from an elected official, but I do think it sums up the mood of the times here.
And Senator Grassley, I think, also indicated later he would supply the swords if they wanted to fall on them.
Apparently, the Senate is willing. We're the government. We're here to help. You've heard that before. And the bankruptcy idea, as a practical matter, you know, you might well be able to get the money back if you threw AIG into bankruptcy. But the trouble then is that would be an event of default, and that would cause all of these other credit derivatives to have payments become due. It would lower credit ratings on instruments globally, and it would kick off exactly the kind of cascade that the U.S. Treasury is attempting to avoid in this situation. So, you know, bankruptcy might be an approach that could address the question of these payments, but then you've got to ask yourself, are you cutting off your nose to spite your face? And does that make sense, especially in an environment when the tax approach might get you where you want to go?
I want to mention, by the way, also, Senator Grassley wanted the AIG executives to apologize for the collapse of AIG, but he also said Tuesday they obviously didn't really mean, that is today, that they should kill themselves. Joe Grundfest, a couple listeners say that, again, this issue of fraud by derivative traders really needs an answer. How can these activities not be fraud?
Well, the answer very simply, again, is we don't yet know. I could easily construct a situation where, you know, all of the trades were done honestly and openly. Everybody had an understanding that they thought the market was going to operate in a certain way, and these guys were massively and unbelievably wrong. And in hindsight, they just looked like utter, total fools, and we're now stuck paying the bill for their foolishness. I could tell an alternative narrative in which these guys were involved in a, you know, large amount of fraud, lots of duplicitous activity, tried to hide what they were doing from other people in the company and potentially regulators with potential oversight. And again, we just don't have the facts. We don't know what really went on there.
Do we know enough, Jesse Eisinger, to think perhaps that these bonuses were a kind of Madoff Ponzi scheme because the money simply wasn't there and yet the bonuses were created nonetheless?
Well, what we do know is that AIG was losing money on these trades in 2007. So it wasn't something that just began in 2008. The credit default swap were widening, the spreads were widening, and they were facing downgrades from the rating agencies, and their counterparties were demanding extra collateral, and that was causing losses. So the idea that this financial products unit was a thriving unit in early 2008 when they made these contracts is just simply wrong, and it goes to the sort of I hate to be hyperbolic, but a deranged mentality on Wall Street where these guys still think that they deserve bonuses. I think simply for showing up at the office, and the actual results of what they do is irrelevant. And the thing, these guys are kind of like amputees. They're walking around with these phantom limbs, expecting that, you know, that their bonuses should come because they can still feel them, but they still feel like they have them, but they don't really deserve them. I just want to say that I got an news alert from the Wall Street Journal today that AIG paid bonuses of $1 million or more to 73 employees at the financial products division, including 11 who no longer work at the company. So they're giving bonuses to people who've already left, and I think that sort of goes to the argument that they got to pay these bonuses to keep these guys.
So in addition to amputees, you've got phantoms who aren't even there anymore. These are what Tom Wolfe would have called masters of the universe. They are, in fact, almost exclusively men, and the fact of the matter is you can certainly understand how people who have lost immense amount of monies in the market or in their 401ks are not thrilled with this. Let me go to your calls and find out responses and questions from listeners. Max, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. That's a very good program, as usual. My question is simply this. I understand that the automobile the unions affiliated with the automobile industry have had to renegotiate their contracts under pressure from the government, basically. Why can't the same approach be applied here? I don't understand that. And furthermore, AIG has settled these obligations regarding these lousy CDCs, paying mark-to-market values. Who is managing the store here? I don't understand that.
Well, good questions, both. Joe Grunfest?
Yeah, no, all I can do is agree with the caller. As you've heard me say in several occasions, I wish I had more information. I wish I had a better view of what was going on here, because it's extraordinarily difficult to criticize a situation that you don't fully understand.
One thing we do know, though, Joe Grunfest, and that is that 100 cents on the dollar was pretty much the agreement that was made to here. Why was that?
You mean in terms of the bonuses?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, again, this is a situation where arguably there could have been more leverage, more arm twisting, but clearly AIG had an opinion of its counsel saying they had to pay this money out. The money was out the door on the 15th. I think this was badly handled by everybody, and I do think that there's going to be a very high price to pay. And if you ask me to bet, I think that price is going to be paid through tax legislation that Congress is going to consider. I think a large part of this money is going to come back.
And what about,
I think that,
yeah, go ahead,
oh,
Jesse,
I was just going to add that I think the caller was also discussing the payments to AIG's counterparties, and this goes to Professor Grunfest's point about transparency, that what's really happening here is the money is going from taxpayers, from the government, to AIG so that AIG can pay its trading partners. And only this weekend did we find out what those payments actually were. And those payments are billions and billions of dollars to American investment banks like Goldman Sachs and foreign banks like Société Générale in France. And and they're getting paid 100 cents on the dollar for trades that have gone very bad. And traders who trade with an insurance company that can't afford to pay the insurance should not be rewarded by U.S. taxpayers. So this is yet another example of why the financial bailouts from the U.S. government have been very poorly structured and poorly thought out, and really an enormous waste of money. And we have to sort of get a hold of this before it's too late.
And how are you going to get that money back? I mean, this, you know, it's going into foreign hands. You've got partisan bickering already here that's just continuing to go up exponentially. I mean, the Democrats are blaming the former administration, of course, and, you know, this Republican legislators are blaming this administration. It seems to me that, if anything, this is just going to be more loggerhead.
Yeah, you're not going to get that money back, but you have to start today by completely revamping the plan of bailing out banks. And I think they're doing that very slowly now. Geithner has rolled out stress tests
to figure out which financial institutions are solvent and which are not. And then presumably what they're going to do after they figure out which are insolvent is to take them over in a nationalization that we're not allowed to call nationalization because that has politically damaging connotations to it. But eventually that's going to be the result. And what we need to do is do that more quickly than, sooner rather than later, because the value is dripping away from us as we speak.
I want to go to more calls, but I'm looking at a news item from the Associated Press that says that Attorney General Cuomo in New York says that contracts written in March 2008 guaranteed employees 100% of their 2007 pay for 2008, regardless of their performance. So there you have that contractual wrinkle. Chris from Marin, go ahead.
Hi. My comment is this. Why don't we just take the FDIC and expand it dramatically and just let the FDIC go into all these threatened institutions and start to monitor and supervise an unraveling of these debts? I mean, federal auditors go into corporations all the time. It's a common practice to look at their books and sort things out. Why not just expand the FDIC? I mean, to leave any kind of unraveling of these debts up to the technocrats who owe their jobs and their money to the bosses who set up this whole bad situation in the first place, I think it's a big mistake.
Joe Grunfuss.
Yeah, well, the FDIC is extraordinarily good at walking into your plain vanilla version of a bank and trying to figure out how to shut it down on a Friday and get it restarted again on the following Monday so that there's no disruption. I'd love to get Jesse's views on this as well, but it's my understanding that there's relatively little horsepower in the federal government that would be able to walk into an institution such as AIGFP, which, by the way, is located in Britain. So you've got, you know, another set of questions in terms of geographical jurisdiction, and take that over and actually be able to run that business. I don't know that we've got the intellectual capital to do that at the FDIC or at any other branch of the government. Jesse?
I think this is, you're absolutely right. This is one of the big holes in our regulatory capacity and really the international regulatory capacity. AIG was a global insurance company that had no national regulator. It was regulated by the states in parts, and then in aspects of the business were not regulated, like credit default swaps. The FP unit was run out of London, as Joe says. So one of the things we're going to have to do, also, one of the big tasks is completely overhaul our regulatory structure so that we don't have huge gaps, so that we don't have private equity firms and hedge funds falling outside of the purview of regulators, so that we have potentially a national insurance regulator, so that we have regulators looking at systemic risk questions of whether financial institutions are adequately capitalized or not, and so that products like credit default swaps are brought in under the scope of regulators. But this is the kind of massive, complicated problem that is very hard to deal with when the entire institution is on fire, as it is now. But I think we're going to have a more aggressive attitude about AIG, and they're bringing it on themselves by paying the bonuses out.
We go to some emails. Here's Stefan in Sacramento. Says, weren't the auto workers' pay and benefit contracts entered into before the government loans? Where is Wall Street's uproar over renegotiating those contracts for loans that are less than the total of bonuses paid by financial institutions from our tax money and bailouts?
I think that this goes to the heart of the GM bailouts drew a lot of populist ire as well. And we hear a lot about UAW workers with supposedly gold-plated benefits. And I think it was a lot easier in our era that I think is over now, to sort of attack working class union workers who got paid a decent wage and could have, a nice house, maybe two cars and a boat or something like that. But we never really stoked this ire about Wall Street people, because we live in a sort of aspirational society where everybody thinks that they want to get, aspires to getting vastly wealthy, and they think that these guys are really brilliant and
making a lot of money from dint to their own genius. And now that we've seen this revealed for not to be genius, I think this has really turned against people. And I think that there's been a sort of societal hypocrisy there, and I think it's finally reversing itself.
Look at some more of your emails here. Jesse, here's Sean who writes, I'd like to hear your guest, especially Jesse Eisinger, comment more on the role of the media in this financial crisis. It seems to me that the media's watchdog idea has disintegrated over the last number of years. No bid contracts, WMDs, etc. Why is this? There are still good reporters, but the major print media outlets continue to fail us. With all the hand-wringing about the demise of newspapers, I'd like to hear some discussion about how and why we've been let down by the Fourth Estate.
Well, this is a long conversation, but I think that the media did a very good job of covering the housing bubble specifically in the years of sort of 2005, 2006 timeframe. We were very poised to write about a bubble, having learned our lesson from the stock market bubble, which the media largely missed. They championed the stock market bubble of the late 90s and got very caught up in it. Now, I have to say, on my own account, I never did. I wrote bearish articles in 1999 about the stock market, and I wrote about the bubble, and I predicted in November 2007 on the cover of Portfolio that Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers were in deep trouble and overleveraged and probably going to go out of business. So, but
Jim Cramer should have been reading you, obviously.
Well, in the late 90s, I worked for Jim, and he did read me, and we used to argue. But the issue is that I don't think I had the intellectual imagination to understand how precarious the entire financial system was. So I think there was clearly a failure of journalism here, but I think it was also much bigger than, you know, even the bears like me thought. And we're grappling with our own failures and going to have to learn a lot of lessons here. But this was a multifactorial, very large global credit bubble, and it would have been very hard for the press to stop it. The press did not.
But the press is, as the listener indicated in the email, the press is in decline. The press is losing resources, and some are talking about the demise of certainly the regular daily newspaper. We're seeing things hanging by threads here in San Francisco with the main newspaper, The Chronicle.
Yeah, well, I think that's a crisis for our democracy that we have such threats to the press, and the press has not helped its case by missing the case for war in Iraq. So we didn't examine that very properly. We've had scandals like the Jason Blair scandal. So the press has done a lot of damage to itself, but clearly the press is crucial. A free and vibrant press is crucial for democracy and crucial to hold business and capitalism accountable for its actions. And I think that we're going to have to come up with some new model. There's clearly a crisis in the media, and maybe it's a nonprofit model, maybe some rich guys want to pony up to create an endowment for the New York Times or something. But we're headed into a terrible, terribly dark time where cities like Seattle and Denver and San Francisco are potentially going to lose newspapers or already have lost them. It's a deep, terrible crisis, and it really is going to mean that people don't know what's happening in their local governments and or on the national and international scale.
Let me go to more emails. Kevin writes, Joe Grunfest, since it's such a giant company that's too big to fail, why doesn't the Fed break AIG into smaller companies along the lines of mini bills? Since AIG has its hands in so many cookie jars, why not separate each of its major divisions into individual companies that may be easier to manage or be allowed to fail in smaller components?
Great question, and I think on a going forward basis, one of the smart things for our government to look at is to put in place a financial structure where there really is no one bank that's too big or too interconnected to fail. It's much better, we know, to avoid a problem than to try to fix the problem after it arises. The issue with moving in that direction, though, is the question of international competition. Large banks in countries like Japan, China, and in Europe are often viewed as national champions. And if we create a financial system in the United States where we divide up authority, where we divide up power, we divide up resources in a way that becomes very manageable for us, it's entirely credible that we create institutions that are unable to compete internationally. So in order to really get from here to there, we're going to need a level of international cooperation that I'm not optimistic about us achieving, especially if the goal is to create smaller financial institutions.
Well, here's another small issue that's brought up by, or about small derivatives in this case, by a listener named Alex. He says, it's not the size of the bank investment firm, hedge fund, it's the risk they take. Get the issue right. Quote, unregulated derivative traders with no money to cover their losses owed to other institutions, end of quote.
Well, you know, when you talk about size of a position, what you really do mean is the risk that's posed to the financial system. So if you've got an option, if it's a highly leveraged position, you can clearly have much more risk. And it becomes a mathematical question in terms of how you actually measure the risk in the system.
And Jesse Eisinger, here's a listener named Art who says, President Obama needs to come down hard on the side of the public and not just try, but definitely stop these AIG bonuses. Was AIG's awards of bonuses to those who helped undermine the free world's financial system a crime? Was it a fraud that could have been exposed by someone in the Obama administration? What did Geithner know and when did he know it? He and Larry Summers are too well connected to Wall Street to do a good job. He should be replaced by a watchdog, not a lapdog. How about Elliot Spitzer? He could redeem himself while doing the rest of the country. He could redeem himself and do the country a favor. It's an interesting proposal, isn't it?
Yeah, the last guy we want on the stage now is Elliot Spitzer, but I think the listener is reflecting this very palpable outrage, and it's something that has resonated. You know, the Merrill Lynch bonuses at the end of the year, where Merrill Lynch accelerated bonuses before getting saved by a merger to Bank of America, which in turn was saved by the government. People understand this, that they're paying to save these companies, and the companies are then using that money to pay bonuses. It's very easy to understand. And this is maybe why it's now hitting the public, because for a long time we've been talking about collateralized debt obligations and super senior tranches of residential mortgage-backed securities and credit default swaps, and I think people's eyes glazed over. And now we're just talking about massive bonuses to guys who are losing money.
These are also people who are losing money. I mean, they're seeing their 401ks go to, as somebody once said, 301 and 201ks, and the result is and that their taxpayer money is being thrown at this bailout, and suddenly guys are getting bonuses for, what, bringing about the catastrophe in the first place?
I mean, that's exactly right. You see, Michael, we have to deal honestly and intelligently with this political anger, because unless we're able to do that, we're not going to be able to move to the next step of actually dealing with the problem that we have lurking in our financial system, which really has to be fixed before the economy can get back on a solid footing.
It's a very delicate situation politically. Joe is absolutely right, because the public anger is going to undermine any political case for more bailouts of the financial institutions, even though as disgusting as it is, the financial institutions will need to be bailed out, or the economy risks spiraling into an even greater depression than what we already are experiencing. And so it's a very dangerous situation that the Obama administration finds itself in. And what they're going to have to do is properly design the remaining bailouts, the continuing bailouts, so that there is actual responsibility and pain, economic pain, felt by the top executives at the banks, the equity holders of the banks, maybe even the bond holders of the banks, so that there's an understanding by the public that they're sharing in the pain.
I think you're right. This has presented more landmines politically than anybody would have even imagined. But we've got Little, who's head of CEO of AIG, and what's he getting, a dollar a year as CEO?
Right. So, yeah, he's not particularly, Liddy is not particularly benefiting greatly from his position. But, you know, Ken Lewis is in a bank, the Bank of America, that was bailed out, and he retains his position. Vikram Pandit is the head of Citigroup. He retains his position. I think that there's been relatively merely symbolic measures of these guys taking taking no bonus for 2008, but, you know, Lloyd Blankfein was paid something on the order of $70 million in 2007, which is a pretty good year, and probably you'll tide him over to 2008. I don't know about you, but that's a lot of shower curtains.
Professor Grenfest, we've got a listener here who says, will the SEC regulate credit derivatives? What will happen to the Commodities Futures Modernization Act?
Everything's up in the air. Everything's on the table. The government's going to have a good, strong look at redesigning the entire financial system. And you know, what we can hope for is that we come up with a system a heck of a lot more rational than the one that we have now. But the more difficult question, I think, is exercising whatever authority Congress creates intelligently. Let's remember that we did have regulators at each one of these major banks. All right, you know, the federal government was all over Citibank. It was all over every other major bank that was regulated as a bank that got into trouble. And they did nothing to prevent those issues. They didn't see it coming either. So one of the challenges that I see that we have here is not merely the question of filling in these regulatory gaps, not just preventing the kind of regulatory arbitrage that allowed AIG to run wild in London, but creating the regulatory intelligence that we need to use the authority that the government will have much, much more intelligently than we've done in the past.
A couple more emails here with just a minute or so left. This is something that we haven't heard yet. Here's Chris in Santa Cruz who writes, why not pay out the bonuses in toxic assets? Then the recipients will be more motivated to value them, and we can learn more about how bad things really are. Another listener, Grace from Rogers, Arkansas, says, what would happen if AIG failed? The execs wouldn't get their bonuses then. What are they putting on their resumes? I took AIG to the ground and still got my bonus. Also, what would happen if AIG failed? Well, what would happen if AIG failed?
The short answer is we don't really know, and I think governments worldwide are afraid of running the experiment, because there is a risk that it causes a phenomenon much worse than what followed in the wake of Lehman Brothers, and it has capital markets seize up, credit no longer flows, and we wind up being in a much worse situation than we're in today.
Agreed, well, Jesse Eisenberg.
AIG has failed, and the government has taken it over. It just hasn't recognized that as a matter of legality or as a matter of simply common sense. But Joe's absolutely right that if the government hadn't taken it over, it probably would be much worse. But that doesn't mean that these guys deserve bonuses. If they had gone bankrupt, they wouldn't get a dime.
One listener says it's not really a bonus, it's just a salary. Listen, we're going to have to end on that note because we've come to the end of the hour. I want to thank you, Jesse Eisenberg, Wall Street editor for Portfolio Magazine.
Sure, thanks for having me.
And thanks, Joe Grenfest, former commissioner with the SEC and now presently the co-director of the Rock Center on Corporate Governance and professor of law and business at Stanford. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, our listeners. Also want to give thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory and Tina Lauerberg, with production assistance from Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.